China has been in the spotlight in recent days as they've been hosting the Winter Olympics. My next guest with his book explains how China should be the focus of attention for many more serious reasons than the Olympics, and they're not reasons to celebrate, to be sure. He details China's history and track record of attacking freedom at all levels, all paths, and how China just may have positioned itself to be more than just a threat to America, among other nations. His book is Bully of Asia, Why China's Dream is the New Threat to World Order, which has just recently been released in an updated edition. He is the president of the Population Research Institute. Stephen Mosher, how are you today, Stephen?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on the show.
Website for Population Research Institute is pop.org, and you can follow Stephen on Twitter at Stephen W. Mosher, and keep up to date with China and all the other insight that he offers through his writings and his posts. I want to bring in maybe the casual observer, bring them into your book, because maybe they're more familiar with the what you write about than they might think. Does the story of the women's tennis player Feng Shui give any insight to the China that you present in your book and how they operate, how they treat people, how they deal with people who get out of line?
Well, it certainly does, because Peng Shuai, Miss Peng, is one of the top-ranked women's tennis players, but she made a mistake. She criticized a senior Communist Party official, a former vice minister, and for that, she is now locked up somewhere in China. We don't know exactly where, because no one is allowed to publicly criticize the Chinese Communist Party and get away with it. She now claims that her tweet criticizing the vice minister who raped her, forced her to have sex, was a mistake, that someone else sent it out in her name. She's desperately trying to, I think, get out of China. And she may never be allowed out of China again. We will have to see. To their credit, of course, the International Women's Tennis Association has said they will not be holding any events in China until she's released. That's in sharp contrast to the way that Hollywood and most athletes and of course, the NBA behaves, which most organizations, in order to get access to the China market, are happy to kowtow at regular intervals to the bullies in Beijing.
Yes, the NBA certainly among those two, that, to make that as an understatement. In Bully of Asia, the picture you paint is this is not a sudden desire on China's part to become the center of the world, because as far as the China leadership sees it, it's their heritage we're talking about here now.
Well, that's one way of looking at it. Historically, China dominated its part of the world. It was sitting on the eastern edge of the Eurasian continent. It was surrounded by smaller states. To the north was tundra. To the west was desert. To the south were the Himalayas, mountains, and jungles. So it was absolutely dominant in its part of the world. And it would like to be dominant in the global sense now. But it's also driven by Chinese Communist Party ideology. And they want to be the dominant power in the world, and they want to restructure the world order around Beijing, around China. They don't like the current world order, which is run by the United States, by the West in general, and they want to replace it with a China-centric world order. And that world would be a very different place, by the way. In that world, we would not be free to speak as we are speaking now. In that world, all industry would be moved to China. China would be the factory floor of the world. The rest of the world, in China's dream, would be a supplier of raw materials to China's factories, food for China's workers, and sheep-like consumers of Chinese products. That's the economic vision that the Chinese Communist Party has of the future. The political vision is one in which we would all be Peng Shuai. We would all be under the control of the Chinese Communist Party, afraid to speak out for fear of punishment.
China doesn't really stand alone in this ideology, too, because I've talked about here over the years on the show how it's a path being taken similar to what radical Islam wants to do with the restoration of the Ottoman Empire.
Well, there are a lot of people, of course, who want to get in positions of power and stay in positions of power forever. And one way to do that is to use communist ideology, that fanciful dream that we're all going to be one day equal and the government is going to wither away. Well, it doesn't work out that way. It's a means of seizing and holding power. And political Islam is the same thing. You must do what we say because God wills it. And of course, limited government, the kind of democracy that we enjoy is very rare on the planet. I mean, for goodness sake, it didn't exist for most of human history. And in the future, it may vanish again as well. So it's something to be prized. It's something to be defended. It's something unusual in human history where most people, over most of time, have lived under despots, have lived under tyrants, have lived under kings and emperors who didn't have their interests at heart, but had their own interests at heart.
Talking with Stephen Mosher with his book, his updated version of his book, Bully of Asia, Why China's Dream is the New Threat to World Order, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. How does China sell itself? Meaning, how can they perpetrate what you detail in Bully of Asia, but still not be as isolated as they had once been?
Well, that's a good question, and I'm not so sure that China sells itself as it buys influence. It has spent billions of dollars on propaganda in recent years. The propaganda budget has gone up not just twice or three times, but about 10 times. You see inserts in major American newspapers. You see radio stations that broadcast Chinese propaganda. They did have TV stations a few years ago in the United States until we shut some of them down under the former administration, the Trump administration. But they're doing that all over the world. They're setting up Confucius Institutes on American college campuses, Confucius Institutes that teach the false history of China, according to the Chinese Communist Party and its ideology, in order to try to influence the next generation of Americans to have positive views of China. And the other thing they do is they use what they call united front tactics to go in and compromise and corrupt and hollow out existing organizations from the inside and then use them for their own purposes. And finally, of course, the third magic weapon, and these are the three magic weapons as declared by Xi Jinping, China's new red emperor, the head of the Chinese Communist Party. He said, we have three magic weapons. We have propaganda. We have united front tactics. And then we have the People's Liberation Army. But make no mistake, they conquered China in the Chinese Civil War in the 1930s and 40s by using those three magic weapons, by in massive propaganda effort in the nationalist-controlled areas of China that they were attacking, by going in and hollowing out institutions, organizations in the nationalist areas of China that they were attacking. They went in, for example, and took over the China Youth Party, the China Socialist Party, and used all those parties against the Nationalist Party. And then finally, when their opponent, their enemy, the Nationalists, had been weakened by propaganda and United Front, they went in with the People's Liberation Army and finished them off. I think that model is the model that they're using on the world today.
And one of the recommendations you make, because the U.S. in this instance is, as we've seen in many instances of foreign affairs leading from behind, is to separate, decouple the U.S. economy from China. And maybe that was most dominantly shown to be important when during the COVID outbreak and lockdowns, literally every Walmart shelf was empty because of their high attachment to products made in China.
Yeah, it's easy to produce cheap goods if you have a serf-like or slave-like labor force, which is only paid peanuts, not allowed to organize, not allowed to form labor units, not allowed to strike for higher wages, not allowed to criticize the government or even the factory owner, who's probably connected to the party in some way, which protects him and his profits. So, yeah, it's cheap labor, it's cheap goods, often produced by prison labor, child labor, and, of course, slave labor in the Uyghur areas in the far west of China. So that's why the goods are cheap. And if you're buying Chinese-made goods, then you're contributing to that system that oppresses over a billion people. Overdependence on China in terms of sourcing goods there is very dangerous, because we've seen a dangerous pandemic spread by China. We know that most of our pharmaceuticals are produced now in China. What would happen if those were cut off? What would happen to people with high blood pressure who need those medications to keep their blood pressure within limits? What would happen to people with other conditions who need medications that are now produced only in China? So that's a danger. That's a strategic vulnerability. And we have many nations around the world that share our values and institutions. We should be making things in places like South Korea, Taiwan, Japan, India. Let's make things at home. Let's bring factories back to the United States and employ American workers to produce American goods in American factories. How about that? So there are many, many reasons to decouple from China. And I think that's been brought home to everybody by the fact that they released a dangerous virus on the world that has made many of us sick and has caused many deaths. Why would we want to continue to have close economic ties to a political organization like the Chinese Communist Party that's willing to do that once? If they do it once, who knows? They might try to do it again sometime.
Especially since it's obvious that their attempt was a success as far as their eyes are concerned for a first attempt. It's a fascinating book that does reveal, again, as Stephen just referred to, the truths and the realities about China, about their connection with COVID, about our connection economically to them, and many other aspects, which, well, unfortunately, we have been just watching instead of reacting to. And hopefully it's not too late to change the situation that you will find in the here and now through Stephen's book, Bully of Asia, Why China's Dream is the New Threat to World Order. Stephen, Masha, thank you so much for the education that your book gives and for being with us today.
Good to be with you.